Good afternoon, everyone. Happy holidays. Today is Thursday, December 8th, 2022. It's 1:30-ish p.m. And this is the AMS Technical Advisory Committee. First item on our agenda is a call to order. Do we have a determination of quorum?
We have a quorum.
Excellent. Moving on to item two, minutes from the September 15, 2022 meeting, reference attachment 2A. I need a motion to accept.
Do I think move to accept?
Polling second.
Right. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor of accepting the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Moving on to item three, staff reports. Item 3A, financial progress report. Reference attachment 3A, Mr. Baker.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you can see that this goes through October 31st. So far with our billing, we've expended about 20% of the funds. We're in good fiscal position, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
There are no questions. Need a motion to pass.
Tomasi, move to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor of the financial progress report signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Moving on to item 3B, technical progress report from Mr. Baker.
All right. Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. So, I'll be brief. I know Matt Stewart from our staff is going to talk a little bit about our Safe Streets for All, and you're going to see our traffic crash stuff today. From the technical side, I will say, following a lot of the federal grants, we are pretty much, it looks like things have slowed down a little bit in terms of what is currently open for federal grants. I will say that the central office of the state is applying for, I believe it's called a... can't remember now what the name escapes me. It's some kind of capacity building grant that's about, there's about $21 million available. They did ask for the MPOs to be involved in terms of, and by capacity building, I mean sort of like learning and, you know, some type of getting funds to bring people together and discuss new ideas. So they asked us to be a part of that. Luckily, we didn't have to write an application or do anything. But if they do get the funding, we might be pulled into that a little bit, but not too much. And then also from a technical more administrative perspective, Carrie will be sending out letters about membership coming in this next week. So please review your memberships for both policy and technical advisory committee. If there are any alternates you want to add, people that have moved on, please let us know. We try to, you know, follow the headlines when positions change, but this is our annual upkeeping. So please be on the lookout for that. And otherwise, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Moving on to item 3C, AMS Federal Funds Report, reference attachment 3C, Mr. Pallette.
Okay, thank you. Our current balances in our federal funds we're in good shape. STBG, our balances, we have a little bit of a deficit, $402,000. In CMAQ, we have a balance of almost $1.5 million. And in TASA, $469,000. The CMAQ is not a big concern because that's a statewide program, and we kind of share our balances with the rest of the state. Since our last September meeting, we had two sizable jobs sell. The first one is State Route 43 widening in Streetsboro. This had STBG and CMAQ funds in it, $3.3 million of CMAQ and $850,000 of STBG. And the other big project that sold since September was Riverview Road et al. That's Riverview Road and several other roads in the valley. Most of them are in the valley. It's an Akron resurfacing project. And we have $700,000 of STBG in that project. Another big project that I think sold just yesterday is East Exchange Street. It's a big Akron project on the south side of the University of Akron along Exchange Street. It's funded with $3.8 million of STVG funds, and sometimes there's a little bit of a lag between the time these sell and when we are notified. So hopefully everything is okay with that project. The couple other things I wanted to mention, we have statewide, if I did my calculations correctly, there's about $46 million of STVG carryover from all the MPOs collectively. Our attitude is, you know, we have the projects, we have a lot of PDIP projects that we have kind of parked in outer years, and you know, we're going to try to pull as much in as we can, try to use up that money, if, even if it means that we, you know, pay it back in another year, we want to try to use that to the best of our advantage. We're still working on the carbon reduction program this year. That'll be $2.5 million. And also, one last time I want to mention that ODOT has a great website to help you with the bipartisan infrastructure law funding programs, all the discretionary funding programs. I have that on your attachment 3C, the website, and it really helps understand all these new grants that are available. And as Curtis mentioned, there's not a whole lot of grants coming due here in the next month or so, but I'm sure after the new year it'll kind of ramp up again. So that's all I have. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. Yes.
Your memo mentions AMATS being willing to do a loan with another MPO if necessary. Excuse me. Wasn't that a practice that ODOT discouraged in the past, or was it a different pot of money? Or it seems to me there was a concern by ODOT about this loaning between MPOs and the need to catch up on the practice or something.
I don't recall that, I think that overall ODOT really encourages, you know, all the MPOs to try to use, you know, the money that's allocated toward them up, if it means doing loans or whatever it takes. What ODOT hates to have is, you know, $45 million, a $45 million balance, you know, on the books from one year to the next. So. As far as I know, the bottom line is ODOT encourages the MPOs collectively to try to use up the money that's allocated towards them.
Like with the amount of money that's out there, there is a possibility that some MPOs might have their allocation stripped from them for the year. Mm-hmm. If that does happen, that we could be the recipients of that because we have a negative balance and we have more projects in the pipeline. And that's why when we've been managing the program with Amy and Dave talking about, you know, we want to be negative $1 million all the time, because that means we have $1 million in needs that, you know, we can possibly get that money from somewhere else. So, you know, but that's been their main impetus, is that we can only carry over so much, or ODOT threatens to take away that money. But from the loan side, they've always been pretty supportive of us doing that, if it means the money's going to get spent now instead of next year.
So the MPO that gets money stripped, are they not being aggressive enough or not coming up with match or what?
It can be, typically the locals are letting them down in some way or another. The locals aren't, you know, it could be a local share problem from the locals. It could be just delays in the project that, you know, continue to, you know, it could be public outcry and, you know, they pump the brakes and say, oh, we're not going to do this. And so they give the money back, or they ask if they can delay it 6 months. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, one of the reasons we did the PDIP program with the incentive of an extra 10% to help with the local share is because, you know, as an MPO, we want to be able to tell Hudson or Barberton or whoever, hey, if you move this up, you're going to save $40,000, $50,000 on top of just getting it done sooner. And so that's kind of where we've been going with it. But I think it's usually like a myriad of issues. And I think a lot of people, I don't want to say get complacent through these pandemic years, but I think there's an element of that. Projects, you know, have slowed down. The development of projects slowed down over that two-year period, and now some MPOs and their locals, you know, aren't ready to deliver them when they said they were 4 years ago or 3 years ago or so. So I mean that, and that's me reading the tea leaves. That's not, you know.
Well, don't get me wrong. I wasn't criticizing. I was just.
Oh no! But I'm just, you know, I'm trying to think of what some of those things would be, and I think that's typically where it's been. I mean, $40 million is a lot. It hasn't been that high for quite a few years. So, you know, and it could change. You know, there could be projects that the MPOs are working to pull in, and so maybe, you know, there isn't that. But and then also keep in mind, like, even of the $40 million, there's probably 30 of that, maybe 25 of that, that is sub-allocated to the MPO and cannot be taken away. So we're really only talking about that additional that ODOT gives us as discretionary for the urbanized areas, that if we don't spend that sliver, they're going to take that sliver away.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Can there be a consideration that a lot of our projects were applied for and early estimated 3-4 years ago? They're just getting to the point where you're filing tracings with a locked-in number that was awarded 4 years ago. Nobody could have seen in their crystal ball 4 years ago what's happened to the cost of fuel, concrete, asphalt, and other supply chain issues causing your locked-in number, but your estimated cost of your project sometimes, you know, doubled. Yet that local share commitment now is completely borne on the LPA that's delivering the project. In light of that, is there some maybe consideration to rethink short-term how AMACS can, or even ODOT can provide some additional assistance to deliver those projects that were decided upon 4 years ago when they got started?
Well, we would finally give you the 15% increase, and, you know, I mean, if it goes above the 15%, I mean, it's still possible, but it would, you know, the TAC TIP subcommittee would have to kind of review it, and I believe the policy committee would have to approve the additional amounts. We do have another, you know, we do have another funding round coming up this summer. Our policy is not to allow for additional funds for a project. I don't think we're going to change that. But, I mean, the 15% is easily available. Higher than that is also possible, but it would just have to have the approval of the TAC TIP and the policy.
And, Mike, at this point, from my observation, like, we haven't heard that request from a lot of, you know, we've gotten 15%. I think a lot of people in this room have requested the 15%. But we, you know, we haven't gotten to the point where someone's saying to us it should be 30% because of these inflationary pressures, and let's open it up and talk to our committees. I mean, the one thing I would go back to is just that, I mean, obviously these are unprecedented times, but, you know, we have gone through these times before where we've seen these inflation spikes, and, you know, that is why we ask for legislation and we ask you guys to commit to the project, you know, knowing that there are things that can happen. And so it certainly wouldn't be incumbent on Dave or I to unilaterally say, no, we wouldn't consider it. But I think at this point, we haven't heard a lot of discussion from our members saying, you know, we want that. And if they do, at this point, it's been limited to the point of it's like, well, okay, well, then we have a process to go through that. You come to the TAC tip, you make your requests, we bring it to the policy committee, they consider it on its face value, and we move forward. At this point, you know, I'm inclined to say, like, we probably won't just based on the groundswell. But again, if this committee, if the technical advisory committee wanted to raise that point and take it to the next level, that's where we would go.
I guess in regards to ODOT, we will take requests for there's justification. I mean, if the MP or local puts together that justification of this money was secured 3 years ago on an estimate or a preliminary estimate before inflation, we will definitely forward that along to the funding manager down at central office, such as like safety, and they do entertain those types of requests.
I just want to commend the staff and the members that deliver the projects that the state's not spending money and we have a negative balance that puts us in a place where we could receive more money in the future. I think you guys should be commended for that. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, moving on to item 4, old business.
No old business.
All right. Item 5, new business. Reference 5A, Safe Streets for All process update. Attachment 5A, Mr. Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon, everyone. So, as you hopefully saw, Attachment 5A kind of, it's more or less a progress report of what's been happening with Safe Streets for All over the last few months. And I'll just hit on a couple of highlights with that, but I wanted to just, I guess, go backwards a little bit. And I know this committee, before my time, spoke a little bit about Safe Streets for All, but just wanted to reiterate why we're doing this and kind of what Safe Streets for All is. So as you may recall, the new funding source with BIL, $1 billion per year across the country, so $5 billion total, and it's a very flexible source that can be used toward all roads, all modes of transportation to improve safety. And to kind of try to do some systemic approaches to fix safety on different types of corridors. The money can be used for action plans, which is what we're doing, as well as implementation grants. And what AMMAT's decided to do was to do the action plan on our own, not using Safe Streets for All funding. And the hope is that by doing this, that will tee us up very nicely for actual implementation funding. So we're going through this process. It's been a very big part of what our staff has been involved in. Some of the details are in Attachment 5A, but just did want to hit a couple of things. We just concluded our stakeholder focus groups. I think the one that had the highest attendance was 14 people. We had 6 different focus groups. So we did get a lot of good input through that. Data collection and analysis is wrapping up. Most of the data has been collected. There's still a little bit of analysis going on. One of the things that we're also doing, not maybe the hard data, but we're trying to do basically a literature review of other plans that exist within the planning region that have safety-specific recommendations. So we're kind of starting with some of the obvious ones or areas where we know there are a lot of safety issues. But if there's anything you want to make sure that we get captured as we're going through this process, please let us know. Big part of what we're involved in right now is our public survey. We had an online survey that launched last week. And I know a lot of you on the task force have been helping us spread the word on that. We really appreciate that. As of noon today, we had, I think it was 89 responses, so we're doing okay. I'd like that number to be a whole lot higher. The survey will close on January 6th, but anything you can do to help us spread the word on that and get people in your circles to take that survey, that's only going to help us. So as far as next steps, okay, so like where we're going now, We will have our task force, which I know a lot of you are members of. We don't have a date set yet, but probably looking early January, January 5th or January 10th are two of the dates I have in mind so far. So stay tuned on that. And so we'll be meeting again, and we're just starting to move more toward how we're identifying effective improvements for areas where there are safety issues. How might we classify corridors and determine the proper treatments for suburban roadways versus, you know, the rural issues that we're seeing on high-speed corridors, or, you know, the very unique issues that exist in urban areas where you have higher pedestrian counts and more users using the road besides just motorists. And we'll be looking at what we can control through design, and then even through, on a policy side, what can we move the needle on behaviorally? And this is something that we'll be talking through with our task force in the next couple task force meetings. So, you know, we'll be, I think the first, I'll say, 3 months of 2023 are going to be a very heavy focus on this plan. I mean, it already is, but we're looking to wrap up this whole effort, you know, have a final study by May. So stay tuned on that. And are there any questions about the process so far or about the program? Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Moving on to item 5B, traffic crashes and safety performance measures 2019 through 2021 report. Reference attachment 5B, Mr. Poulet.
Actually, we're hearing the presentation.
We're splitting it up.
Great.
Keeping it fresh. So I'm going to present the beginning portion of 2019 to 2021 crash report. So the traffic volumes are slowly starting to inch back up from the pandemic times. We're starting to get a little back to normal traffic volumes. Unfortunately, fatalities really increased during the pandemic, and in 2021, we haven't really noticed a decrease, unfortunately. Bicycle and pedestrian crashes have followed basically the same pattern as traffic volumes have. When pandemic volumes went down, so did pedestrian and bicycle-related crashes. But they're starting to inch back up again with the traffic increases. So we're going to look at the trends in the 2019-2021 crash report. All right. So some of the trends in 2021, vehicle miles traveled went up about 9% from 2020 to 2021. But it's still under the pre-pandemic levels. Total crashes increased by about 1,022, which is about 6% in 2021 from 2020. Serious injury crashes also have slightly decreased, but the number of serious injuries, which is like the actual injuries, not the actual amount of crashes, but the actual injuries have actually increased, even though the crashes have decreased. So more people are getting hurt and less crashes, basically. Fatalities have basically remained the same, but as you can see, fatalities during the pandemic have definitely increased. We have not noticed a drop, and it's definitely higher than it's been in the past, so this is a major concern. Crashes were analyzed. We downloaded the crashes from ODOT and plotted them in GIS with the coordinates that were provided. One thing that we noticed is a lot of the crashes were misplaced. Some of the locations that we highly focused on, we checked all the crashes, but some of the areas that we really focused on, sometimes there are multiple locations where state routes cross each other. So we have to check to make sure that the actual intersection of the crash is where it's actually located. And if not, we had to correct those. Another concern is a lot of times when ODOT places freeway crashes, if it's, for example, if it's 77 in White Pond, they will have a big pile of them at the very center of the interchange. And when you dig a little deeper, some of those crashes are on the mainline freeway, some of those crashes are on the ramps from the freeway, and some of them are actually at the intersections where the ramp is at the street. So we had to kind of separate all those out to have a correct analysis. And then we separated, after we moved the crashes to their proper locations, we had to determine whether they were intersection or segment related. So most of the time, crashes that are within 250 feet of the intersection are considered intersection crashes. However, if a car is departing the intersection and has a crash, that is a segment crash. If a car is backing out of a driveway, if it's in that intersection bubble, that is still a segment crash. So there are some extenuating circumstances, and we look at all those details. So our high crash criteria for roadway sections is 3 crashes per mile per year, and a minimum of 30% of those crashes have to be injury or fatality. That's kind of a new thing that we're looking at in the past. And so if you look at last year's report, it was similar, but a couple years' reports, we didn't have that criteria. So a lot of the locations that are considered crash locations in the report 2 years ago, they're definitely not the same as they are now. So because we're trying to focus on the actual crashes, not just property damage, but the actual crashes that cause injury and fatality. For intersections, we had a minimum of 9 crashes on a 3-year period, and also that 30% of the crashes had to be injury and fatality. The new criteria no longer include crash rates, but we focus mostly on severity of crashes. A composite score is calculated on how the crashes are ranked. So the total number of crashes are ranked, and the percentage of injury and fatality are ranked. And then that those rank numbers are added together, and the locations with the lowest composite score are the actual worst locations because they're the highest ranked. So the high crash segments, we had 143 segments that met the criteria, and those are all listed in Table 1 of the crash report. 2 sections tied for first place position. The first one is State Route 59 from Alpha to State Route 261 in Portage County. And then the other one is actually State Route 241 Maslin Road from Crumroy to Oaks Drive, South Corporal and Abackman. The number one intersection is actually State Route 18 and Medina Line Road out in Medina / Bath Township / Copley Township. So actually I looked at this one, and there's a sight distance problem in almost north and south, both north and south directions. There's huge piles of dirt to protect the homes behind them, and there's trees right up to the stop bar. So if they come around, if they don't stop, or if they try to turn right or something like that, and the light's red for them, that's probably not helping. So freeways are actually not analyzed by us. We do not analyze freeways because ODOT analyzes freeways. They analyze them by 10-mile sections, which is really small, and there's no designated stopping point. They just start at one end and go 1/10 of a mile all the way down. They only consider the top rural, the 50 top rural and 50 top urban locations statewide for the study that they do. So there's not a whole heck of a lot of segments. And I'm going to leave it to Dave.
Okay, thank you. Next part, the second part of the presentation deals with bicycle and pedestrian crashes. Bicycle and pedestrian crashes kind of have some unique characteristics. First of all, there's no list. There's no list of locations because they kind of happen randomly, somewhat randomly, and they're just kind of all spread out. They have a high percentage of injury and fatalities. And they also involve, unlike other vehicular accidents, bike and pedestrian crashes involve children. Children are actually riding their bikes or whatever, in the road without maybe knowledge of the rules that they need to follow. Bicycle crash trends. We had a few more in 21. We had 9 more in 21. Injuries increased by 12. And we only had one fatality, which was the same as in 20. I'd like to look at these crashes by the month, and something really odd happened with this crash report. Usually, bicycle trends by the month is a pretty well-balanced kind of a bell-shaped curve. I don't know why, but in 2021, there was a spike of bike-related crashes in September. And I looked at them all just to make sure there was no mistake, and I still can't quite figure that out because usually it's a pretty well-defined bell curve, but for some odd reason, we did have that spike that we usually don't have in September, and most of those were in 2021. Ages. When you look at the ages, like I just mentioned, some of these crashes involve children, and the first category there is all ages less than 15. And you can see how there's a significant number of crashes in that age group. And also, I'd say there's maybe a little increase as the riders age also, but I think that is so important. And I think if we want to target or if we want to use educational things to help with curb some of these crashes, I think that's the age group that you kind of need to target on. Pedestrian crashes. We had a few more, like Amy said. Bicycle pedestrian crashes kind of followed the same trend as vehicular crashes, where they went down in 20 and then they kind of inched up in 21. We had 20 more in 2021, and then in 23 additional injuries. And fatalities, we had one less fatality. Pedestrian crashes monthly. This has been something that I have seen since I've been doing this. For some odd reason, October, there's always a big spike in October. And the only thing I can conclude at this time is it seems like September and October, at least in recent years, have pretty nice weather, but much shorter, many hours less of daylight. The days get shorter. People come home from work. They wanna bike, run, go for a walk. Same in the morning, and it's pretty dark yet. And before they. Also, they used to change the time earlier. They used to change the time. Now it's November. They used to do it. I think it was near the beginning of October. So I honestly believe this spike in October is a visibility issue, but I'm not positive. The hours that most of these pedestrian crashes happen, you can see there's a spike in the morning between 7 and 8. That's the time a lot of kids are walking to school. People are out perhaps walking to the bus stop, going here and there before the day starts. And then at 2 o'clock, I call this the after-school hours, beginning around the 2, 3 o'clock hour, school is over, and then you have work is over, and then you have people out being active. This is the age breakdown for pedestrian crashes. Once again, it's heavy on the less than 15 age group. The next topic is safety performance measures. I just want to touch on this briefly. New federal requirement for ODOT and the MPOs. We have to track the number of fatalities. The fatalities per 100 million vehicle miles traveled, serious injuries per vehicle miles traveled, and then number of non-motorized fatalities and serious injuries. The way it works is in 2015, we took 5 years of data. We took 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014 and 2015. We averaged all these values. We averaged those 5 years. And then every year thereafter, we've been averaging 5 years. Unfortunately, the first two, we haven't done too well with. We have a 21% increase in number of fatalities and a 31% increase in fatalities per 100 million vehicle miles traveled. Unfortunately, with the with some of those rates, we have actually had more fatalities and less traffic, so that really drives up a rate when you have to do it in terms of vehicle miles traveled. Serious injuries and serious injuries actually went the other direction. They've been going down, so that's good news. And then also the number of non-motorized fatalities and serious injuries that also has gone down. So the first two have not been real good, but we have made improvements in the other areas. Very quickly, I want to touch on ODOT safety programs. Once again, because we're looking mostly at injuries, fatalities, we've shifted to a safe systems approach. And basically, ODOT has three safety programs. They have the abbreviated, the formal, and then the systematic or systemic. Very quickly, the abbreviated is reviewed quarterly. It's $250,000 max per application. These basically are low-cost improvements in high-risk areas. The formal application process is the one that maybe most of you are familiar with. This is the one, this is the most popular one. They review applications twice a year, August 31st and March 31st. The maximum application is around 5 million, give or take. And these are your bigger, high-cost projects that improve safety. And then the last one is systemic applications. And these are focused on roadway departure and pedestrian countermeasures. And these are the type of improvements that you want to do system-wide. Like you want to put chevrons at every curve that has, you know, a certain degree of curvature and so on. So I do want to make sure, though, that you understand that no matter which one of these you are interested in, you do have to go through ODOT. You have to go through Dave Griffith in District 4, and I have to apologize, I forget the name of the safety person in District 3. But these all go through ODOT. And lastly, if your community does have an issue, if you have a location, even if it's not on the map, we were just talking this morning that so many times when you look at data, it's it's stuff that's happened, it's accidents that's happened, but you may have a location where you have a lot of near misses, and you you want to try to do improvements before it becomes a location on the list. Feel free to give us a call. There's been times I've gone out and looked at locations and made some, recommendations. And, you don't have to get a consultant involved or, go through any formal process. We'd just be glad to come out and help you. Or if you have a location on the list and you want to know more about what's happening there, also let us know. And we have a lot of analyses, a lot of tools available that we can run the data to that kind of gives you a more complete picture. So you can call me or Amy. We both work with safety, and we would be glad to help you. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. Yes?
Dave, on your bike crash data, does the data allow you to distinguish if the rider was wearing a helmet or not?
I don't think it's on the crash report the officer fills out. Sometimes if you have the time to read through every crash report, sometimes I've noticed that the officer might make a note on the write-up that the rider was wearing a helmet. I do see that more with motorcycles. I think motorcycles have it's noted more, but with bikes, I don't think there's like anything formal where an officer marks it. He might just make a note of it. So
I know
it's hard to track.
Sorry, with auto accidents, they always put so-and-so was wearing a seatbelt or not.
Yes.
Even though that's a law that you have to wear the seatbelt.
Yeah, seatbelts is a formal mark on the crash report the officer fills out. What's amazing, though, is when you start looking closer at serious injury and fatality crashes, even though seatbelts is a law, what's really amazing is how many times people are not wearing them. In fact, it's very common. It seems very common with fatal and serious injury crashes that someone in the car doesn't have a seatbelt on. Any other questions?
Chairman. I just want to commend staff as well on this report. These safety reports have been invaluable to us locals for many, many, many years. They're all posted on the website. Locals can go on and look at trends. We all locally know anecdotally where our hotspots are, but to have these reports, it really gives us another tool. Many times the countermeasures are, they could be just as simple as additional lighting or chevrons or upgrading signs, and then other times we have to come with a formal application. But again, thank you to staff for these safety reports.
Appreciate it. All right. Good report, Amy and Dave. There is a motion required to accept the traffic crash and safety performance measures. Can I have a motion? So you may agree to.
Second, Hadley.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the motion passes. Moving on to item 6, resolutions. 6A, resolution 2022-20, approving amendment 23 to the fiscal year 21-24 transportation improvement program to add 9 new projects and combine 4 projects into 2 projects. Reference attachment 6A, Mr. Pillay.
Okay, thank you. This is a rather lengthy amendment. Usually we don't have this many projects on one amendment. But this amendment basically adds 3, it actually adds 9 new projects to the TIP. And then it also combines 2 sets of projects in the TIP. The following three projects, there's three projects being added in fiscal year 23. The first one is State Route 8, the High Level Bridge. This is a major bridge replacement project. This was actually advanced a little faster than expected, so ODOT wants to make sure this gets into the TIP in fiscal year 23. Cleveland-Maslin Road resurfacing is being advanced to fiscal year 23, and the North Main Street Bridge, the bridge between Akron and Cuyahoga Falls, is being added so that Summit County can pursue some additional funding for that project. The next six projects are being added in fiscal year 24, Cleveland-Maslin Road sidewalks, Darrell Road reconstruction, Highland Road, Valley View Road resurfacing, Ravenna Road, Shepherd Road Broadway is an intersection project, Springside Drive sidewalks, and Schwartz Road resurfacing. And then the two projects, the two sets of projects being combined is Valley View Road resurfacing and Valley View Road Old 8 intersection improvements up in Northville Center Township. And the two projects in Barberton being combined is Wooster Road West resurfacing and Wooster Road West reconstruction. And I have a couple slides here. I just, since I had my laptop here, I just wanted to show you that the old State Route 8 bridge is going to be replaced with like two separate structures. To me, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm an engineer, but that's, to me, that's a really exciting project. The two projects being combined in Northfield Center Road is the intersection that's in red, and then the resurfacing that's in magenta, and then the two Barberton projects being combined is the resurfacing in red, and then the large reconstruction project in magenta. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
All right, no questions. We're looking for a motion for resolution 2022-20.
Moore, move to approve.
Thank you. We have a
Tomasi second.
We have a second. Thank you. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? None. Motion passes. Reference item 6B, resolution 2022-21, approving fiscal year 23 elderly and disabled program project awards. TIP amendment number 24. Reference attachment 6B, Mr. Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This program provides funding for the public transportation of the elderly and disabled, including transportation to and from work. The program is now administered by ODOT, formerly administered by Metro and PARTA, with AMATS responsible for project selection. The AMATS area now receives around $850,000 per year in elderly and disabled funds through the FTA, Federal Transit Administration's Section 5310 program. The ODOT Office of Transit received applications for funding in the spring of this year. Funds were initially awarded in June to four social service agencies with AMATS Resolution 2022-12. The AMATS area has now received over $600,000 in additional federal funds for this set of projects that we're asking you to approve today. Funding goes towards the purchase of handicapped accessible vehicles and computer software for scheduling. The awarded funding goes to PARTA, United Disability Services, and Family and Community Services. Attached to this memo is Resolution 2022-21. The resolution approves the amendments to fiscal year 2023 of the TIP as requested by ODOT, and the staff is recommending approval of this resolution. Are there any questions?
All right. Seeing no questions regarding resolution 2022-21, a motion is required.
Kovacic, so moved.
Moore, second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor of approving resolution 2022-21, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Moving on to item 6C, resolution 2022-22, connecting communities planning grant, reference attachment 6C. Ms. Ryder.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Attachment 6C is the Connecting Communities Planning Grant recommendation for the sixth round of funding. Applications were made available on the MS website on September 1st. We had a budget of $80,000. Two applications were received by the September 30th deadline, both submitted by the Village of Lakemoore, one being a joint application with Springfield Township. The Connecting Communities Planning Grant Task Force met in October and discussed the commonalities between the two applications. The task force decided a combined study would be ideal, providing the Village of Lakemoore approved. The Village of Lakemoore was consulted and agreed to awarding the total ask of $52,000 to complete the combined effort. Therefore, MS staff is requesting approval of the Village of Lakemoore and Springfield Township Living in Lakemoore Spartan Trail Extension Study as one $52,000 planning grant. If there are any questions, I would be happy to answer them.
All right, there are no questions regarding resolution 2022-22. Motion is required. Do I have a motion?
Cadley recommends approval.
Second.
Pauling, second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor of passing resolution 2022-22 signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Any other business?
No other business.
No other business. All right. We are ready to adjourn. Our next regular meeting is next year, January 19th. That's it.